Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Dan and Dante, and welcome to Rare Bird Radio, where we are all dads all the time. And today, it is my great pleasure to be interviewing Keith Zaffron, who is the founder of the Great Dads Project and also the author of How to Be a Great Dad, No Matter What Kind of Father You Had. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Dan. Thanks.
It's great to have you. And actually, I was particularly excited, Keith, to have you on today. I'll tell you why. Because you and I come from completely opposite ends of the spectrum, right? I mean, you're the great dad, and I'm the asshole dad, right? So we both went to Cal. We both went to Cal Berkeley. You were the captain of the rugby team.
Oh, I didn't know
team.
That. Okay.
Yeah. I came right after you. But you were the captain of the rugby team. I went out to one rugby practice, woke up the next day and couldn't move my legs, and stayed in my dorm for the next 3 weeks. So, you know, we do things totally differently. And for purposes of this show, since we're talking about parenting, we also do parenting very differently. And I'll tell you why. And I don't know if you've read my book or not, but I come from a position of where I think that everybody knows how to be a parent. I think that 5 million years of genetics has just programmed all of us with all of the tools that we need to be parents. And I mean, the monkeys are parents, right? I mean, the elephants are parents. We can all be parents. And I think that if you love your kid, you just kind of do the best you can, at the end of the day, it's going to be okay. And I've also watched Lifetime specials where, you know, these ex-cons and crack dealers, you know, they have kids and the kids grow up and they can't believe what a great dad they had too. So, I mean, everybody has the ability. Now, you, on the other hand, you, and I have read your book and I've stalked your website, you have a lot of tips and tricks and techniques and lessons, and you make a lot of money coaching dads on what to do and telling them exactly how to do it. And so what I want this interview to be, what I would love for you to do in this next 30 or so minutes, is to convince me and the four people who are listening to this podcast, what it is that you can actually do. How can you make yourself a better father? Is it possible to go beyond your DNA and just make yourself a better father? So is that fair?
I think that's fair. I think it's quite a challenge. I think I might have an easier time persuading the four people listening than the guy who gave up on rugby after a few sore legs. But we'll see where it goes.
Look, let me tell you something. I've given up on a lot of things a lot quicker than that. Don't kid yourself. But let's start here.
Maybe
let's
I can help you.
Yeah, no, that's why I have you here today. I'm excited. I want to get help. I need help. Trust me, my kids will tell you that too. Why don't we start with, I know that you spent some time working in prisons, not as a prisoner, but working in prisons.
Uh-huh.
I know that really affected your view and attitude on parenting. Why don't we start with there and tell you how you kind of formed your opinion on teaching fathers?
Thank you, Dan. You know, it's actually a great place to start because I think that goes to the heart of what you're positing as the differences between us and the different perspectives we have about parenting. So I had the profound privilege, and it really was a privilege, of being able to go into prison 2 days a month for about 6 hours each day and work at a very deep level with about 600 men over that course of 6 years. So I worked with about 50 men every 6 months or so. And I was a part of a program called the Prison Entrepreneurship Program. It was a business training program for guys in prison with the hope of getting them the skills and the education and the transformation that they needed so that when they got released, they could have a way to support themselves, not go back to crime, and end up back in prison. We call that recidivism, or the recidivism rate, which is, you know, depending on who you talk to, anywhere between 60 and 80% in the United States. So 6 to 8 guys out of 10 who get out go right back to prison.
By the way, what state was that in? Was that California?
I was in Houston, Texas area, but that recidivism rate is a national rate.
Well, in Texas, I think the recidivism rate is like 130%, isn't it?
Well, it's significant. It's a real problem everywhere, but it's a problem. Yeah, there's some issues in Texas. We'll just leave it at that.
Right, clearly. Rick Perry doesn't think so, but that's a whole other podcast we'll do later on. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. So we, I was a part of this prison entrepreneurship program, and my role was to do more of the softer side of character development with these guys. And that developed into part of what I did with them was working with these guys, because one of the differences to what you started out in your introduction, saying, hey, you know incarcerated guys who, you know, are still good dads and their kids turn out okay. And, well, statistically, nationally, guys, particularly boys who grow up with dads who have been incarcerated, have a 85 to 90% greater chance of being incarcerated themselves.
Right.
And I saw that firsthand. Of these 600 guys I worked with, more than half of them, almost three quarters, had fathers who had been incarcerated before them.
Yeah, it's a
and
shocking
I think part
statistic.
Of the,
and I know that statistic, and it's unbelievable when you hear it every time. You know?
It really is, and it points to something very deep and very, I think, almost enigmatic, and that is how often children walk in the footsteps of their parents, particularly boys with their fathers.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt
sure.
you? Because I really want to ask you a question. Because I know that statistic, and I'm very interested to hear your opinion on it. Because I've always, mm-hmm. and this may be a socially or politically charged question. Do you think it's genetic? Do you think it's cultural? Do you think it's social? What is it that creates that ridiculously high rate of children of incarcerated people ending up in jail? I mean, are they genetically predestined to go to prison, or does something happen culturally or socially or psychologically?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I don't think it has anything to do with biology or DNA. I think it has everything to do with the desire that every child has to find approval and acceptance from their father.
Hmm.
And when we don't get that, When I don't hear my dad tell me he's proud of me, when I don't feel loved by my dad, I spend the rest of my life, subconsciously usually, seeking that approval. I don't know that's what I'm looking for, and so I'm trying to get it everywhere I can. I'm trying to get it from coaches or teachers or employers or women, but I am what I call affirmation starved. I didn't get enough from my dad. And so I end up seeking that approval. And one of the ways that we subconsciously do that is walking in his footsteps, becoming like him. Because, of course, we think as children that our dads were incredible and that they chose the life that they had and wanted it, whether that's true or not. And often it's not true. But subconsciously what happens in a child's heart, particularly a little boy, is I feel like if I can be like my dad, then he will love me. Then he will accept me. And I can't tell you, Dan, the stories that I heard in prison of boy after boy after boy had become a man who followed in the same footsteps. I did a workshop for dads in Mexico a couple of months ago. I had, I don't know exactly how old he is, I think but he's in his early 60s, okay? And
yeah.
he just blurted out in the middle of my workshop, and when I was talking about this very thing, how we walk in the footsteps of our parents, he blurted out and said, I didn't even know my father. He said, I didn't even meet my father until I was 37 years old.
Right.
I said, okay. And then he told me this. He said, when my dad was 24, he was incarcerated for murder. He says, I learned that later, you know, in my life. He says, when he was 37. So the man in my workshop, when he was 37, he learned that his father had been incarcerated when his father was 24 years old for murder. And then he said this. He looked right at me and he said, and when I was 24 years old, I was incarcerated for attempted murder. And he said, what the, you know, F, what the?
You can say fuck,
oh my
Keith.
God.
I won't get mad at you. It's all right.
I'll leave that
We're
to
all
you.
Big boys. Okay.
So, but
fuck,
that's
fuck,
the point. So
okay,
he,
now
so he
we've
didn't
got
even
it out.
Know.
Go.
He didn't even know. He had never met his father, never heard that story, and yet somehow this subconscious symbiotic relationship led him to walk in the identical footsteps of his father and end up in the prison at the exact same age for the exact same crime. Like, it's just uncanny.
Right. So while you're in there, during all of those hours and years that you spent there, what did you learn about
yeah.
dads? Well, how is a prisoner just like me, a lawyer, And by prisoners are usually better than lawyers by a long shot. But what did you learn about fathering and maybe the essential nature of what it means to be a father and how we should do it?
Well, one of the things I learned came to me this way. I had the opportunity to speak to both. So I mentioned that this is an entrepreneurial training program. We taught these guys business, how to write business plan, well, how to have a business concept, write a business plan, and how to give a business pitch. So then at the 6 months later at their graduation, they've practiced their pitch, you know, their 12 to 15-minute pitch, hundreds and hundreds of times. We brought in executives from around the country, even lawyers, Dan.
God forbid. What a disaster. What are you doing to those poor? Haven't they suffered enough, Keith? Please.
So we bring in these executives from around the country to sit on what are essentially venture capital panels to judge the business plan competitions of the inmates. Amazing. And then I have the opportunity before the graduation to do some sharing of stories and teaching. I've got my inmates in jumpsuits on one side of the room and business executives in business suits on the other side of the room because, in prison the rules are they can't mingle like that, so there's an aisle between it. And I've got the jumpsuits on one side, the business suits on the other, and I'm sharing stories from my childhood about my painful relationship with my dad and all of the rejections there. I'm sharing stories about my healing journey. I'm talking about how I have become a great dad to my boys. I have three sons. And as I'm sharing these stories, I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing and hearing weeping on both sides of the aisle.
Yep.
And it struck me like these are universal issues and needs. It doesn't matter if you're wearing a jumpsuit or a business suit. Almost none of us had perfect relationships with our fathers. And sometimes much less than that.
Yeah, but doesn't that kind of tip the scales over to my favor or my kind of way of thinking? Because I say that it almost doesn't matter. We all had bad fathers to some extent. I mean, there's always something you can point to that your dad didn't do or shouldn't have done or you wish he had done better. And yet here you and I are, and I could match my neglectful father story tit for tat with you, but I'm as close as I could possibly be to my father now at the age of 45. You know, despite all those things that he did. And that's kind of where I came from in my book. And my perspective is saying, you know what? It almost doesn't matter. Because I will say this about my father, and I hope you can say it about yours. I knew my whole life that my father loved me to death. My dad would do anything. He'd take a bullet for me. He really would. Now, he may have screamed at me and yelled at me and told me what a piece of shit I was every single day on top of that. But I also knew that he loved me. And that was enough for me without all of the techniques that you teach in your workshops. So to an extent, is it enough if you love your kids? Or how is it that your techniques specifically help the relationship more than where my relationship already is?
Yeah, well put. The research shows, especially recently, that loving your kids is actually not enough and not effective. And I think you'll understand, maybe even agree with this in a moment. What matters is how much our children believe we love them. It's how much, and specifically in the research, it's how much they feel loved, and in this case, especially by their dads. So you can have a dad who really does love his children, but if he doesn't know how to express it in a way that his kids get it, you know, if a kid doesn't feel loved by his dad, and his dad's defense is, of course I love you. No, look, I provide for you. Or whatever it is, whatever his defense is. If it doesn't get translated, and whether that, you know, whether the fault, some of the fault of that lies with the father, some of the fault of that lies with the kid, it could be circumstances, it could be divorce, it could be the dad's away, military, business, whatever it is, the dad could, in his own mind, fully believe and actually feel that he loves his children. But if his kids don't feel it, if there's a breakdown in that communication, there's a problem there. And that kid, you know, we want to say, well, he turned out okay. I guess, again, we have to define, well, what is okay? Does that mean that he's not incarcerated? Does that mean that he has a decent self-esteem? Does it mean that he or she is able to grow up and become a good mother or father to their children? You know, at what level are we talking about a baseline survival okay? Are we wanting our kids to thrive, you know, have wonderful, successful, happy lives? And what produces that? Those are the kind of questions that I'm trying to deal with. And I land on the side that says it's not just about feeling or believing that you love your children. It's having the skills to communicate that in a way that your kids really get it, know it, feel it.
Right. Well, you've clearly spent some time in my house and listened to conversations between me and my son, which is nice. It's very interesting. The fact that a father can love their kid and the kid just doesn't know it. And I accept that. And I think that's a really valid point. And I think that gets into what maybe the core skills are. And I mean, I guess my whole life, I've certainly believed because of my own relationship with my dad, because I don't know about other people's relationships. I only know about mine. And my father's core skill with me was he just loved me and I knew it and that was enough. And I know you talk about in your writing and your workshops, you talk about three core skills. Now, in my world, I have three core skills too. And it's one is, you know, get your kid a Big Mac. Two, remember to order the fries. And three, drop them off at practice on time. And if I do all those three things, I figure I'm solid for the next 20 years. But I know yours are a little bit different. So why don't you tell us about yours?
The three core fathers.
That wasn't a joke, Keith. I was being honest. What are you laughing at me for? Come on.
I'm just feeling for your kids.
A lot of people do, trust me. They do more than anybody, but go ahead. So let's talk about the three core skills, though.
These are, skills that I developed working with these guys in prison, doing the research that I have, trying to boil down child psychology and child development. And, you know, when you compare these lists with different psychologists and different child development experts say, I feel like I can put so many of the things that kids really need from their parents, and particularly their dads, in what you might call a three buckets. Or sometimes I like to think about them as the three legs of a stool, you know, bearing equal weight, holding up. So the three things that I teach dads, I call them affirmation, acceptance, and affection. Affirmation, acceptance, and affection. And affirmation, you know, I talk about verbal and written affirmation. We can, you know, write our kids notes and letters or send them texts and emails, or we can speak it. And affirmation is really just saying what's true and giving them that positive praise, hopefully more about their character than maybe their behavior or their appearance. It's telling a kid how great they are and really meaning it. And sometimes having to search for that, but it's just praising our kids for what they've done well, when they've been honest, when they've been responsible, when they've been generous or caring or sharing with another friend. I'm all the time talking to my kids, trying to find the gold that I see in their life and calling it out and naming it for them. And the whole point about affirmation, what that does for a child is it builds their view of themselves, of who they are as a person, and who they're becoming as a young woman or as a young man.
Can an affirmation take the form of constructive criticism? Like when they do something which is clearly wrong, can you affirm that what they did was just wrong, but that they either have the character to fix it or that you know they won't do it again?
That's the affirmation part. So I wouldn't say the affirmation, you know, it may be semantics, but I wouldn't say the affirmation takes the form of constructive criticism, but that on the heels of constructive criticism, I give the affirmation. And the reason for that is really the second fathering skill. It's that acceptance. Because what you're doing, when you criticize or discipline your child, and then afterwards give that affirmation of who they are to you and who you believe they can be in the world, what you're doing is you're communicating unconditional and unending acceptance, the second fathering skill. One of my boys has a particularly difficult time telling the truth. And
He's a man. He's a boy,
yeah,
right, Keith?
He's becoming a man. Yes, he certainly is. He's a middle teenager. And I caught him in such a blatant lie the other day. And I told him, I said, you know, when you don't speak the truth to me, it breaks trust. It damages my trust in you, and there are consequences for that. I don't like it. I don't like to see it in you, and it's not a character quality that's going to serve you well the rest of your life. I want you to be a truth teller, not a liar. Okay, there's the criticism. And then I said this to him, lying is not okay, but you are. You are my son, and I will love you forever, no matter what. So there's
the
affirmation.
Let me ask you, and I think that's great, but here's why I asked the question. Because I believe, look, you and I are about the same age. We grew up in the 70s, you know, primarily our childhood was in the 70s and then became adults in the 80s. And, you know, we were being raised before this whole new parenting style originated. And I believe that the coddling of kids today is truly disgusting. I mean, parents have taken it so far. The pendulum has swung so far in the direction of telling them how great they are and making sure they feel good about themselves, and all this, which are all, of course, they're important things. But I wonder if our generation, Generation X, has not taken it too far. When you look at the little girl or the high school girl in New Jersey who just sued her parents because she wanted them to pay for college education, or you see the levels of entitlement that these kids have, I wonder if consistently telling your kids how great they are doesn't at some point fail to serve them well. What do you think about that?
I think we get in trouble if we isolate the telling the kids how great they are from other really important things, like what we were just discussing, also disciplining them and criticizing their poor or unacceptable behavior. So if all one parent is doing is giving praise and coddling and affirming words, and they're not also shaping character, absolutely. But I think the other issue with that is that often I have worked with many, many parents who are so busy and have so many interests and work commitments outside the home that they actually feel guilty for not spending enough time with their kids, not building enough relationship, and they feel bad shaping character or disciplining or criticizing because they know that the relationship isn't there to support it. And so they end up giving lots of gifts, spending lots of money, and just, as you say, coddling or giving praise. But I think it's a mistake to point to the giving of the praise as the problem. I think the problem is a lack of shaping character, a lack of discipline, a lack of time, and lack of relationship.
So occasionally it's okay to be an asshole, is what you're saying.
Well, whether it's okay or not, I've not been able to avoid it. There have been plenty of times where, you know, that I just have to admit it to my kid. Just the other night, I got so frustrated with my youngest. And I raised my voice, and I really hurt his feelings. And at first, I said, if you're going to behave like that, you can just go to your room, you know. And and then he got up to start to leave, and I said, don't you go anywhere. and he said, make up your mind. And he burst out crying and ran up to his room, and I thought, oh, crap, you know.
I got to call Dan and Dante and find out how to deal with this one.
Yeah. Like how confusing that must have been for him. And I was frustrated with him, but I had a lot going on inside of me that was not related to him, other frustrations and some anger about another situation that had nothing to do with my children, and it bubbled up and it spilled over when, you know, what he was doing sort of triggered it, and he got the brunt of it. And so I thought, oh, crap, you know, here it is again. So I went up to his room and knocked on his door, came in. I sat down next to his bed. He was in his bed crying. I apologized to him. I told him I was wrong how I handled that. You know, I said what you were doing was bothering me, but that's not where all the anger came from, and I'm sorry. And I said I'd love for you to come back down and have dinner.
Well, and I'm glad that I have at least one. I'm glad that I have at least one similarity to an established great dad. There's one way that you and I are alike, so that's good. Okay, so we're through affirmation. Let's go to acceptance. Tell me about acceptance.
Well, we've touched on it already. The idea of acceptance is that all kids have such a need to belong, and it really comes out, you know, when they're teenagers. That's why the peer group and the peer pressure and all of that is so influential in our kids' lives, because they want so desperately to belong. In prison, that's what I saw over and over and over again. Every guy I talked to who had been a gang member or former gang member, that's what they pointed to. Every one of them said in the gang, they felt like they finally had a family. They felt like, because most of these guys were fatherless. Many of them had, you know, single moms who were working or not around or on crack themselves. But they said in the gang, they finally found family, which was a place to belong. All of our kids have that. And if I, and this is so key for dads, Dan, in my opinion, dads miss this all the time. Because we get upset with our kids' behavior, choices, the way they talk, the way they dress, the music they listen to, the friends that they make, whatever it is, because we don't like, or I'm going to use this word, we disapprove of something they do, say, believe, whatever, we get that mixed up with also rejecting. So when we speak a word of disapproval, what we intend, if we thought about it, what we intend is to disapprove of some behavior, some choice, some language usage, some choice of clothing, but what our child receives, and here's the communication breakdown again, what our child feels is rejection of the person.
Right.
They don't make that distinction. So when I say, God, I can't believe that you wear, you know, your hair looks terrible like that, they hear, you're a terrible person. Now, of course, that's not what I mean. But that's what they hear and feel. You know, that's what at their developmental stage, they're still abundantly selfish. You know, nothing, everything that happens is about them. And so when we criticize something they've done, something they've said, whatever it is, they feel it deeply about who they are because they're just in the formative stages of developing their identity. And that's why unconditional and unending acceptance is so important. That story I just told about my son lying. It's why I said to him, lying is not okay, but you are. And I will love you forever. It's the distinction between you're okay, what you did is not. And it was so powerful because he was feeling so bad through that. And when I said that to him, he looked up. He'd been looking down at the ground. He looked up into my eyes and he just said, thanks, Dad. And then he reached out and hugged me.
Yeah, and that's powerful stuff. And that segues right into the subject of the spam email you just sent me about hugging your kids and affection. Let's finish this up with affection. It wasn't exactly spam. I kind of said you could send it. You know, I did report you to the government.
Okay.
But still, I'm sure it won't be too significant a charge, so you'll be all right.
Excellent. Well, maybe they won't come and get me before the end of the interview.
That's why I'm keeping you on the line. We're actually triangulating where you are.
Just in case. Okay. affection is, again, spoken or physical, verbal or physical affection. And I just work with dads, like in that email, to actually go outside of our comfort zone for many of us because lots of us didn't get this from our dad. Lots of our dads, you know, really thought that mostly loving was about going out working hard and providing. Most of our dads had dads who kind of grew up in the World War II era, and there wasn't a lot of this affection between dads and children. You know, that was left to moms. So there haven't been a lot of models of this, and a lot of us are either just not accustomed to it or uncomfortable with it. And I work with dads how to express words and actions of love. Because, again, this is acceptance is about helping kids belong. This is about helping kids feel that they are loved and lovable. And what that ends up translating into later in their lives is that they're worthy of a good, loving relationship. They don't go out and seek the kind of relationships that are damaging to them or hurtful to them because it confirms some sort of bad belief they have about themselves that they don't deserve to be loved. So we build this beautiful feeling of love into our kids by hugging them, playfully, you know, touching them, whether it's wrestling. Lots of dads who have little girls who comb their hair or braid their hair, play with them, walk hand in hand at the park, and whatever it is, it's some form of reaching out and communicating physically and through our words, tender, warm expressions of love.
Do pillow fights count?
Pillow fights count. You know,
thank God.
When my oldest,
thank God to have your pillow fights count, or I'd be in serious trouble.
Yeah, well, you know, when my oldest was just becoming a teenager, you know, we had had a lot of physical affection throughout the years, and he would always reach out and grab my hand. We'd hold hands when we went to ball games or whatever it was. A lot of physical affection. But when he became a teenager and he started really growing and getting stronger, he really wanted to wrestle with me. And we kind of developed at one point this nightly routine where we'd go, we had our toothbrushes in the same bathroom, and we would go, hey, let's go brush our teeth. And we walked past the bed, and he'd grab me and throw me onto the bed and start wrestling me and trying to pin me down and punching me. And I thought, oh, my God, like, what the? But I realized this is now the form of physical affection. He still wants to touch me, and he still wants to be touched by me, but it's not necessarily in the same kind of hugging, hand-holding sort of way. He is growing in his masculinity, and his big goal is to best his father. And so, you know, I wouldn't let him do it, but I wouldn't fight too hard either. It was kind of cool. I sort of became the coach or the mentor who's helping him grow, and yet at the same time, I'm the foe who needs to be champion. But I loved it because this was the way that I could touch him in a way that, as a teenager, he still loved it.
Yeah, we got to put some gloves on that kid. Well, I can't
not
believe
with
me. Sorry, go ahead.
I just said, not with me. He can go punch his rent.
Okay. Well, I can't believe we're actually running out of time, and I'm surprised because we haven't even gotten, you know, a third of the way into our list of many topics here. But I want to finish up with one thing or ask you one final question, because we've talked a lot about the core skills. We've talked about, you know, the essential part of being a father. But we also touched on the fact that most of us, you know, the dads of today, you know, guys, you're my age, we grew up in a time when, you know, parenting was just different. The styles were different. The way our fathers dealt with us was a lot different. And so we don't have a lot of role models. We don't have a lot of experience with this new parenting style. And so how does a father of today go beyond what he knows and beyond what he was taught by his own dad and treat his child in the way that, you know, you're talking about? And the way, look, I was a little bit flippant saying, you know, I don't believe in techniques. Obviously, there's many things that you can teach fathers and men on how to be parents. I think it's all effective. And everything you've said today certainly resonates with me. But at the same time, we have to go beyond. We have to go beyond the core of what we know and get a little bit deeper. So, how does a father get deeper, and how does he know what to do?
Yeah, it really isn't any different than anything else we learn. You know, I mean, if a guy didn't grow up playing golf, and he decides in his 20s, 30s, or 40s, and he's going to go out and learn, what does he do? You know, he probably watches the Golf Channel. You know, he may watch a few tournaments. He gets out there and he gets some lessons. Maybe he gets a coach. And he grows by surrounding himself with people who are further down the road than he is, and he practices. And it's really no different. It's what I did. You know, I didn't have much of a model in my own father. We had very little relationship, a lot of rejection, a lot of pain. And so as I was getting older in my 20s, and I started realizing at some point here, I'm going to want to get married and I'm going to want to have kids. I really want to have children, but I have no idea, really, what to do. I know I'm going to love them, but I have no idea how to be a good dad. And so I started seeking out men who had, and this was my way of thinking, who had good relationships with their teenagers. Because I figured if a guy had a good relationship at that stage of life, which is typically the most difficult, he must have done something right along the way that built the foundation for what I was observing. And so I sat down, I actually went to several dads who had these good relationships with their teens, and I told them, I said, you know, I'm going to be a dad one day. I have no idea what to do, and I know if I, you know, start seeking advice once I've already blown it, there's going to be more damage that I want to deal with. I want to learn now. I want to start learning now what it means to be a good man and a good dad. Would you answer some questions? Like, would you meet with me, mentor me? And I'm so grateful I found guys like that who were essentially dad coaches to me. It's why I do the work that I do with men. It's why I lead workshops. The guys who come to my workshops, they're saying the same thing. They're saying, I love my kids. I want to be a good dad. And in some ways, I don't know exactly what to do. And so I work with them. We talk about these three techniques. I give lots of stories and examples. We do exercises together. I give them very practical things that they can go and do. And the best work that happens, honestly, is with the coaching, the guys who decide they want to coach. You know, like if you had decided that those legs, those sore legs were inevitable, but if you got back out on that field and you got with the good right coaches and they trained you on how to play rugby, or in this case, how to be a great dad, it makes all the difference. I got a, if it can just take a minute, I'm going to share with you, I got an email this week from the wife of one of the men that I'm coaching. And typically I'll do my coaching over Skype because these guys are all over the country. And so we'll meet over Skype for coaching. But the wife of one of the guys I'm coaching wrote to me this week and she said, thank you. Your coaching has and continues to have a huge impact. For the many years we've been married, I have hoped and prayed that my husband would have a mentor coach, not just for parenting, but for life. He has found that with you and your Great Dads Project. The man at home is content in his own skin. He looks for ways to connect with the kids. He's present in ways he has never been before. The judgment, frustration, and anger have gone. The things he's learning and applying have changed our whole family life. And then in all capital letters, she said, it is the given to me and our kids. And even better, he sought it out for himself. It brings me to tears every time I think on it. I could go on, but I'll start to cry. So that's the work I'm doing with dads through coaching. I coach individually through Skype, and then I do a small group coaching. I meet with a group of guys over Skype on Wednesday nights, and it's amazing seeing these guys offer advice to each other, encouragement to each other, kind of comfort when someone admits how badly they've blown it or how distant they are from one of their kids and they just don't know what to do. It's getting yourself in that environment where you're not going it alone, you're not fathering in isolation, you're not on kind of fathering autopilot, but you're actually investing yourself in some education and you're getting a coach who can help you take the steps that you need to accomplish what you want, which is to be closer to your kids, to have them feel close to you, and to build the kind of relationship that all of you have always wanted.
Yeah, well, it definitely all makes sense. And I just want you to know, Keith, if you ever need some advice, you can always call me. I'm always there for
Excellent.
You, baby.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Dan.
So before we go, Keith, please tell all four people who are listening, maybe even five at this point because we've kept it short, where they can get in touch with you, where they can find your materials, your workshops, and everything else.
Great. The easiest place is on my website, which is just the Great Dads Project, dads is plural, thegreatdadsproject.org. You can read about my book there. You can find out about upcoming events, the webinar that I'll be doing next month, coaching, it's all there, and you can contact me through the website, thegreatdadsproject.org.
Great. Now, unfortunately, the four people who are listening are all women. So this wasn't much of a marketing thing for you, but I would certainly encourage anybody who's heard this today. I've definitely seen a lot of Keith's work, both on his website and his books and his articles, and he's a really smart, great guy with a lot of deep understanding about the fatherhood relationship with the children, and it's definitely worthwhile to spend some time talking to him or reading some of the things he's written. So I highly encourage everybody to do that. I have been Dan Andante, and you can find me at www.danandante.com. You can find my latest book, The Complete A-Hole Dad, at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and anywhere that fine, offensive books are sold. And, Keith, thank you so much for your time today. It was really a lot of fun.
I had a fun too, Dan. I really appreciate your perspective, your questions, and just having me on your show. Thanks.
Great. All right, that's our show.